Okay, so I just wanted to say a few things about what's going on in the stars. Let's do a little recap for you. For those of you, most of you know, some of you may not, I do Vedic astrological consultation. I've been doing it for some 30 years. And today is the new moon day. And that's why it's real, real dark out, because the moon is with the sun. So new moon means this is full moon. This is the sun. This is the moon. That's full moon. So the sun and the moon are directly opposite each other. So the moon's nice, big and round. And the moon goes like this, and now it's right with the sun. That's new moon. And it only is visible when the sun is up, which means it's not visible because the sun is too bright. So today is called in Sanskrit the Amavasya, the new moon day. In Vedic understanding, you do not begin things on the new moon day. It's to be understood that the male principle, the sun, and the female principle, the moon, are doing what? They're mating. They're in intimate circumstances. And when you're mating, you're mating. You're not busy doing other things. So that's the new moon day. This is the day of conception. Or, formulating the idea. Whatever it is you want to do. Then, tomorrow is called in Sanskrit, Pratipat. First day after the new moon, when the moon goes, okay, off I go again. And that's the day to begin things. So it's not that the new moon is an inauspicious day for activities. It's just that it's the mating day. So the next day is meant to be better. We are very blessed right now because Jupiter has moved into Sagittarius. I've sent this email around. Many of you received it. Jupiter moved into Sagittarius back in November, November 21st to be exact. He will remain there for the entire year, till December of 08. Jupiter rules the sign of Sagittarius, therefore he's in his own sign. Just like when you're in your own house, you're at your strongest, you're at your best. You know where everything is, you're in charge. Same thing with Jupiter. So Jupiter is the planet of spiritual growth, consciousness, awareness, realization, kindness, learning, knowledge, evolution, growth. The Sanskrit word for Jupiter is guru. He's the guru. So when Jupiter's in Sagittarius, we are in for a wonderful, wonderful year. In so many ways on the planet. Now, let's not mistake this to mean all the negative stuff's going to go away. No. Not necessarily. But it means that a lot more positive things will happen. And people will become more conscious and more aware and maybe more conscious of their actions and the consequences of their actions. So this we can hope for. People, for example, that could not normally be appealed to because either they're too ignorant or they won't listen or they're stubborn or they're too wrapped up in their maya, their illusion, may be more receptive at a time like this. Possibly. People that you've wanted to get through to and have been unable to may be more receptive in the coming year. Depends. Anyway, it's far more favorable. Right now in the sky, as we sit here, the sun and the moon and Jupiter are all together in Sagittarius. So it's, in spite of the inclement weather, it's a wonderful day today. We got quite a bit done today, did we not? Okay. That's Jupiter. And then Saturn, also I sent this around, has gone retrograde. And Saturn, it will be retrograde from December 20th till May 3rd. This year. About 4.5 months. Saturn, the positive side of Saturn retrograde is it brings the consciousness inward. And it's very good for formulating long-range plans, things you want to do for a long time to come in the future. Especially things that require time and energy in order to bring them into motion. So Saturn is the time to lay a foundation, build a foundation or build a structure that's suitable for what you want to do. When it's retrograde, it's more the planning stages. Now, I don't want to tell you you can't do anything. To take the next 4.5 months off and relax, it's not practical for none of us. And Saturn goes retrograde for 4.5 months every year. So, but still, things that are in the planning stages can be effectively planned and organized at this time. So, a very strong internal period. Saturn also means old stuff. You know, the old stuff that you still haven't got, you haven't quite learned, you're still grappling with. Everybody's got old stuff. Sometimes we call that the skeletons in the closet. So this is a time where the old stuff will come around once again and pound on the door and say, hey, remember me? We haven't resolved that, remember? Oh, you know, I thought you'd go away and never show your face again. No, I'm back. So sometimes you may have one or two of those. I had one or two of those issues myself. reasonably recently, so. That's Saturn retrograde. And on top of all that, we have Mars retrograde. Now, when Mars is retrograde, you know, Mars is like, Mars is a pretty good guy. You can get a lot done with Mars, but he's also the schoolyard bully. When he's in a bad mood, when he's retrograde, he's a schoolyard bully. So I sent out the notice that Mars would be retrograde. Where's my dates here on this? November 15th, 07 till January 31st, 08. Right, so that's 2.5 months, yeah? And I did say that it would be a dangerous period or potentially a very dangerous period. Of course, for some people more than others, naturally. And I'm still happy I've got all my fingers with the way I've been using the knife in the kitchen. I don't know, I've been slicing and dicing like a madman here. You know? If it wouldn't have been for this nail, I would have lost this one, I'll tell you. Anyway, for some of us, it's more dangerous than others. So just since Mars has gone retrograde, on the day it went retrograde in Chile, we had a 7.7 magnitude earthquake. In Bangladesh, they had a cyclone, killed 15,000 people. In the Ukraine, they had a mine explosion and fire, 100 people were killed. In Malibu, California, our old stomping grounds, there was 14,000 people, there were fires, 14,000 people were evacuated. 80 homes and buildings destroyed. In Omaha, Nebraska, a 19-year-old boy killed himself and 8 others in a shooting spree at a shopping mall. In Oklahoma, 24 died in an ice storm. It goes on. There's more. This is all just since November 15th. There's several others there. But that is real classic sort of Mars retrograde stuff. We should also perhaps bear in mind that when negative things happen on the planet, of course, it's not good, and we don't like to see people suffer. But we should also realize on another level, there may be a clearing that's taking place. And some things sometimes need to be cleared or plants, like we do with plants. Sometimes we deadhead plants and things like that, you know. So it's a cleansing or a clearing, and that may also be part of what happens. I mean, 15,000 people, that's a lot of people. A lot of people. I remember there was, I think, an earthquake in Turkey a few years back. 30,000 people were killed. The earthquake lasted, what, 45 seconds? Boom. That's a clearing. There's no other way to explain that. So anyway, that's a little astrological insight. Focus on the Jupiter and Sagittarius. That's my best advice. With that. Right? Okay. Now, we have used, discussed, taught, learned, chanted, and used mantras for quite some time. Mantras are very, very powerful sound vibrations. We chanted a bunch of mantras in the beginning. And each mantra, it's not just, it's like a prayer, it's more properly an incantation. And it's aimed at God in some cases, or the goddess, or a particular demigod or demigoddess. In the Vedic understanding, a demigod or demigoddess is somebody who's in charge of some universal department. In the Christian iconography, we call them an angel or an archangel. Somebody in the scheme of things, in the universal scheme of things, that's, well, who's ever in charge of the wind and the rain, for example. You know, different cultures and philosophies would give you different names of different personalities. It's to be understood that if a corporation is run by a CEO, a chief executive officer, and it produces 100,000 units a month of whatever it produces, maybe cars or maybe televisions or whatever it might be, somebody's organizing it all. Has to be. So you've got your managers under your chief executive officer, your foreman, your workers. It's a big operation. It's all going to be managed. To think that the universe goes on without any management, it's just, you know, nature. No, it doesn't work like that. Not according to Vedic understanding. So with mantras, we sometimes also invoke or call upon different personalities for different purposes. So, this is open to anybody, but particularly people who've been with us before. Anybody got any munch stories or experiences like that that they would like to share with us? We're just checking to make sure you did your homework. No?
So much going on.
Next week.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe later. All right. We thought we would revisit the Gayatri Mantra today. We have done Gayatri before. The Gayatri Mantra is a very powerful mantra. It's one of the standard or basic or, you know, fundamental mantras that you would learn. And if you've heard mantras at all, you've heard this one at some point in time. The Gayatri Mantra is object is the sun god. In any culture, the sun is worshipped or regarded, especially if you're British or Irish and you're in Spain. You're worshipping the sun all day long, every day, if you can, wearing as little clothing as possible. That is also sun worship in a certain way. So, the sun is the planet that represents self, sense of self, self-worth, self-confidence, all the self-worths, or low self-esteem, self-abnegation, self-annihilation. When the sun is weak, then we have all the negative self-worths. When the sun is strong, we have all the positive. If you want to feel good about yourself and feel self-confident, good sense of self-worth, and be successful in the world, then the sun needs to be strong, or if not, needs to be strengthened. The sun is also the planet that represents health, as probably you already know. And for good health, strong constitution, and the ability to fight off disease, good immune system. Again, the sun is meant to be meditated on or worshipped, praised. You meant to have a reciprocal relationship. So, I'll just read the bottom part, the English part there. The first part is the actual translation of Om Bhur Bhuvasva Tat Savitur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Diyo Yona Prachodayat. That's the mantra. Let us meditate upon the divine light, the radiant sun, the creator of the world, and the giver of life, who is manifest on the physical, astral, and causal dimensions, as he who inspires our meditation. It's a beautiful mantra. The Gayatri Mantra is considered by many to be the topmost of all mantras. It invokes the sun, the essence of spiritual being and light that underlies everything in our material creation. It is the very source of life. Gayatri, which means liberation through song. Gaya is sung. Tri, or tra, means crossing over. Mantra means what? Tra, crossing over the man. What's the man?
Mind.
So mantras help you to cross over the mind, to transcend material identification. The mind is like a mirror. It can be focused on matter, looking down, or it can be focused on spirit. It can reflect whatever you focus it on. But guess what the mind likes to do, mostly? Like this. It says in the Bhagavad Gita that the mind is the best friend or the worst enemy. So to cross over the mind, meaning the mind dragging you down, we use mantra. So in this case, Gayatri, crossing over through song. It means liberation through song. It's said to have a powerful impact on the mind and intellect. It gives determination and willpower to destroy all negative karmas or reactions to past negative deeds. It illumines the intellect, bestows powers, fulfills all desires, and ultimately can liberate the soul from samsara, the cycle of repeated birth and death. It is traditionally chanted at sunrise, high noon, and sunset, but can be chanted anytime and anywhere. It can be used for healing oneself or others, for obtaining wealth, to dispel negative energies, and of course, for spiritual enlightenment. It should be chanted a minimum of 7 times, and ideally 108 times. We're going to chant it a few times. Here's the experiment I suggest. Make a commitment of vrata, if you can, if it's practical for you. A vrata is a vow to chant the Gayatri 7 times, 3 times a day, as close to sunrise, noon, when the sun is highest in the sky, and sunset, for 1 month. For 1 month. And then come back and tell us what happened. See what happens. See if it doesn't transform you. Okay. Om Bhurbhuvasva Tat Savitur Varenyam Vargo Devasya Dhimahi Diyo Yona Prachodayat Om Bhurbhuvasva Tat Savitur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Diyo Yona Prachodayat Om Bhurbhuvasva Tat Savitur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Diyo Yona Prachodayat Om Bhurbhuvasva Tat Savitur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Diyo Yona Prachodayat Om Bhurbhuvasva Tat Savitur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Diyo Yona Prachodayat. Now, that's wonderful. It's music to my ears. Now, I know you're still reading it because you don't know it yet. That's fine. Now, let us envision the song. I know it's dark. And let us see the sun absolutely surrounding us, and then let us have the sun enter into us. Let us become the sun. When you begin to chant a mantra, there's you, there's the mantra, and there's the object of the mantra, which in this case is the sun god. You, the mantra, the sun god. Then there's just what we're trying to do is make all of these as one, where you become the mantra and the sun god. There's no difference. One enters into. It's not that you become the sun god, but you and the sun god are on the same wavelength. That's ultimately where we're going. So let's chant it again like we're doing, but this time envision or feel or embody the sun, the potency of the sun, the sun god. Sun god's masculine, by the way. Okay? Excuse me. Om Bhurbhuvasva Tat Savitur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Diyo Yona Prachodayat Om Bhurbhuvasva Tat Savitur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Diyo Yona Prachodayat Om Bhurbhuvasva Tat Savitur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Diyo Yona Prachodayat Om Bhurbhuvasva Tat Savitur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Diyo Yona Prachodayat Om Bhurbhuvasva Tat Savitur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Diyo Yona Prachodayat Om Bhurbhuvasva Tat Savitur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Diyo Yona Prachodayat Om Bhurbhuvasva tat savitur varenyam bhargo devasya dhimahi dhiyo yo na prachodayat. Okay. Let us meditate upon the divine light, the radiant sun, the creator of the world and the giver of life, who is manifest on the physical, astral, and causal dimensions as he who inspires our meditation. All right, physical, astral, and causal. Well, we know what the physical is. The astral is the subtle body. The astral body contains mind, intelligence, and ego. And when you die, the astral body leaves the physical body and the soul. Mind, intelligence, and ego is the astral body. And then there's the soul. The soul travels with the astral body or vice versa. And at night, when you sleep, the astral body floats up out of the physical body and is connected by the silver cord, the umbilicus at the navel, and you can travel as far as you want in the universe if you're able. Then at death, that silver cord is severed. That's death. And the astral body, mind, intelligence, ego, travels with the soul, wherever it might be, in between worlds for a while, your limbos or wherever else you're going, upstairs, downstairs, until you take birth again, wherever you might be. Causal body is that's like I don't know, shall I say, it's like the karmic record, the causal body. What determines what's going to happen for you in the next lives based on your activities. You know, reactions to your actions. So the sun is the witness. You better watch out, you better not cry, you better not die. He knows when you've been sleeping, he knows when you're up. That's him. They, you know, they give all the credit to Saint Nick, but it's Surya Dev. It's the sun god, really. Okay. Very good. So please, what we'd like you to do in an ideal world is practice this mantra. When can you use it? Driving down the road, waiting for the bus, sitting and waiting in a waiting room. When somebody's trying to talk to you and you want to pay attention to them. What are you doing? Oh, nothing. Sorry, go ahead.
I've always wondered if there's more power in verbalizing mantra or in meditation.
That's a good question. There's as much power. Okay. When you verbalize it, you engage the senses, not just the mind. You engage speech, then you engage hearing. So you engage more of the senses. That's also why we chant on beads, because then you engage touch. To engage as many of the senses as possible locks the mind in, because the mind's always looking for an excuse to do something or other than the program at hand. So, but it doesn't strengthen or reduce the potency to chant it silently. Japa means chanting on the beads. So, for example, if I had my beads, I'd be on. Om Bhuvasvata Savidurvanenyam Bhargodevasirime Dhyoyanapchoryanam Bhuvasvata Savidurvanenyam Bhargodevasirime Dhyoyanapchoryanam Bhuvasvata Savidurvanenyam Bhargodeva. That's how I'd be chanting. Okay. That's called muttering. That is, in Sanskrit, it's japa. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, or God, says, of sacrifices, I am japa. I am the chanting of the holy name through that process. All right. So I did want to share a little bit of Bhagavad Gita with you. This is the conversation between Krishna and Arjuna, Bhagavad Gita, Song of God. This is the Vedic text in Sanskrit, spoken 5,000 years ago, just before Krishna left the planet. The Bronze Age ended and the Iron Age, Kali, began. It's the one we're in now. And this is Arjuna is a warrior. He was supposed to fight a battle on religious principles, a justified battle, because his cousins had stolen their kingdom. He and his four brothers, the five Pandava brothers, their cousins had stolen the kingdom. So they asked for one village back for each guy. Can we have just one little village? No. Can't. So there was a lot of to-ing and fro-ing, a lot of, diplomacy. Didn't work. So it was kind of an inevitability that they go to war. Krishna, who's God, would not participate in the war, but he agreed to take the reins of Arjuna's chariot. And so he drove Arjuna's chariots throughout the battle. So don't let the metaphor be lost on you. So you're fighting the fight. You're doing what has to be done in the world, but you get God to drive your chariot. He won't fight on your behalf. He'll just drive the chariot. He'll guide you. But you have to do the fighting. You have to do the encountering. So that's the beautiful analogy. That's there. So Arjuna saw the armies, and he saw all of his relatives in the opposing army. Can't do it. Can't fight. I can't kill my relatives. So Krishna explained to him the science of yoga, the science of the self, which is the same thing, and said, do you not know you're not that body? You're a soul. The soul can neither be killed, nor burned, nor moistened, nor dried, nor withered by the wind, killed by any weapon. The soul is eternal. Even in killing these people, even on religious principles, you're not actually killing them. So, using that opportunity, he explained this science. So, I'm just going to go to the 9th chapter here. In this verse, he says, Mahatmanas tu mam partha, daivim prakritim ashrita, bhajantyananya manaso, gyatva bhutarim avyayam. Sanskrit's beautiful, yeah? Mm-hmm. O son of Prata, that's Arjuna, those who are not deluded, the Mahatmas, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in service to me, to God, because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. So great souls, Mahatmas, are fully engaged in service to God. You either serve the self, capital S, or you serve the body. You serve spirit, or you serve matter. You serve truth, sattva or satya, or you serve illusion, maya. That's your choice. What are you going to serve? Everybody's serving. You can serve your senses. That's what most people do. Purport. In this verse, the description of Mahatma, or great soul, Mahatma, great soul, is clearly given. The first sign of a Mahatma is that he's already situated in the divine nature. He's not under the control of material nature. How is this affected? That is explained in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. One who surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, at once becomes freed from the control of material nature. How do I get out of the clutches of material nature, Martin wants to know, by surrendering to God, by giving it all to God? Can we get around karma that way? Yeah. That's how you do it. If you think you can do it all by yourself, good luck. We welcome you to it. Take a couple of whacks at it, see how it goes for you. Because material nature is very powerful and overwhelming. I mean, you can't even stand out there in gale force winds. It's upright without getting blown over. That is the qualification. One can become free from the control of material nature as soon as he surrenders his soul to the Supreme Personality. That's how you become free. That is the preliminary formula. Being a marginal potency, as souls are, as soon as the living entity is freed from the control of material nature, he is put under the guidance of the spiritual nature. What does it mean, marginal energy? God, matter, and us, the jiva, in the middle. Marginal energy. He's on the margins between spirit and matter. Living on the edge. He's marginal. He can come under the influence of matter. He can identify with the mind for reflecting matter, or he can come under the influence of spirit. Do you have a choice? Free will, right? Free will. You have a choice. What do we normally do? If we're conditioned by material energy, which we are, in case you haven't noticed, that's material body that you're wrapped around, that's wrapped around you. We are conditioned. We've got a body made up of earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And inside is the soul. Guess what we identify with more often than not? How's my hair? Am I putting on weight? Okay. So it's marginal. We can identify with either. So if you are identified with matter, you're under the influence of material nature. If you identify with God, you're under the influence of the spiritual nature. You will be protected. You will be looked after. That's what you're being told here. The guidance of the spiritual nature is called Daivim Prakritim, divine nature. So when one is promoted in that way, by surrender unto the personality of Godhead, one attains to the stage of the great soul, Mahatma. And you gave us the example that what happened to the Mahatma Gandhi at death, the greatest test, what did he say?
Oh,
did he pass? Apparently he did. He read Bhagavad Gita every day. Apparently he did pass. Okay, one more here, because this is a good one. Jnana yagena chapyanye yajanto mam upasate ekatvena pratakvena bahuda vishvato mukam. Translation is, others who are engaged in the cultivation of knowledge worship the Supreme Lord as one without a second, diverse in many, and in the universal form. As one without a second, diverse in many, or the universal form. So what does that mean? Here's the purport. It's a lot of... There's so much information in here, it'll... You wait till you see. That's only a paragraph. This verse is the summary of the previous verses. Lord Krishna tells Arjuna that those who are purely in God consciousness and do not know anything other than God or Krishna are called Mahatma, great soul. Yet there are other persons who are not exactly in the position of Mahatma, but who also worship God in different ways. So what if you're not fully surrendered, like they said, to God? Now, I'm not fully surrendered, but I think I'm a spiritual person. Okay. Let's find out. Some of them are already described as the distressed, the financially destitute, the inquisitive, and those that are engaged in the cultivation of knowledge. This was back in the 7th chapter. He says, who approaches God? The distressed. Oh my God, I did. What are you going to do? Of course. Some people only call on God when the going gets rough. And when things are smooth, hey, who? What do you mean? Everything's great. Well, I don't need to talk to God. I mean, things are going great. I only do that when I'm in trouble. What's that joke? I can't remember how it goes. There's no such thing as an atheist if he's in trouble. Then he becomes an instant believer. God help me. You know, he denounces him for his whole lifetime at the end of his life. Oh my God, can you help me if you're there? It's kind of like that.
Atheists on a lifeboat.
Pardon?
No atheists on a lifeboat.
No atheists on a lifeboat. There you go. That's it. That's the one. So also financially destitute will turn to God. Inquisitive, just kind of curious, and people who are genuinely seeking knowledge. Okay? So that's what they talked about before. But there are others who are still lower, and those are divided into three. Now he says they're lower on the totem pole here. Number one, he who worships himself as one with the Supreme Lord. He who thinks he's God. Number two, he who concocts some form of the Supreme and worships that. Very popular in the New Age movement. Very, very popular. Just whatever, you know, whatever turns you on, whatever suits you, just make something up and worship that, or, you know, hang on, or interact with the extraterrestrials and, you know, let somebody jump into your body and channel, and yeah, that's, you know, that's what that means. And number three, he who accepts the universal form or the Vishvarupa as the personality of Godhead and worships that. What's that? Nature. Some people see God in nature. I don't believe in God, but I believe in nature. And when I'm in nature, I feel the presence of spirit. Legitimate? Absolutely. How can you not feel the presence of spirit in nature? It's absolutely legitimate. But it's there on the totem pole. That's all he's saying. Okay. My voice is starting to sound like a frog. Okay. Out of the above three, the lowest, those who worship themselves as God, thinking themselves to be monists, are the most predominant. In Eastern philosophical thought, there are people who believe themselves to be God, identified as one with Brahman, one with Spirit. Is that a legitimate realization of the Supreme? Yes, it is. But it's a lower understanding. It's not that it's wrong. It's just a lower understanding.
Is that not saying, recognizing that, you know, it's all one and we are part of that?
Mm-hmm.
Or
correct.
Is that what it's saying?
Yeah.
And that's lower. I don't quite get that.
Yeah. Well, here, you'll hear it in a minute. Yeah, lots of people don't get it, actually. Okay. I'll finish reading this and I'll explain a little bit more. Such people think themselves to be the Supreme Lord, and in this mentality, they worship themselves. This is also a type of God worship. For they can understand that they are not the material body, but are actually the spirit soul. At least, such a sense is prominent. Generally, the impersonalists worship the Supreme Lord in this way. I am God, you are God, everybody's God, we're all part and parcel of God, therefore, we're all the same. The second class includes the worshippers of the demigods, or those who, by imagination, consider any form to be the form of the Supreme Lord. In Hinduism, they say that Ganesh and this person, that person, they're all gods. They're all the same. They're God. They're not. But that's what the Hindus say. That's why what we're talking about here is not Hinduism. We're making a distinction. And the third class includes those who cannot conceive of anything beyond the manifestation of the material universe, which means nature or the cosmos. They consider the universe to be the supreme organism or entity, and they worship that. The universe is also a form of God. All right? So there it's pointed out relatively clearly. There are three levels of God realization, to answer your question. The first level is Brahman, the energy, the energetic. So you can enter into Brahman or Brahman realization, where you realize that you are not the body, but are spirit. And she is spirit, and he is spirit, and so is everybody, so is the dog. And everything is actually dependent on spirit and made from spirit ultimately. And you can merge into that and identify with it. And in that case, lose your identity. But still, it's a very high, it's a legitimate level of God realization. You can transcend birth and death. Okay, that's the first level. The second level of God realization is to recognize God in everybody and to treat everybody in that way, which requires a higher level of compassion and tolerance.
It's not the same thing.
No, it's different. Because on the one level, you're just seeing the energetic, but you're not necessarily recognizing the other person as a divine being. So there may not be the same kind of freedom from prejudice that you would have on the second level. You'd have to accept everybody, even people whom you don't like. And there would have to be no judgment.
Okay, but in the first level, you're accepting yourself as God, and the other person as God, and the dog as God, and everybody as God.
But you're not necessarily interacting with anybody. You're sort of escaping it all. You're transcending it all.
Okay.
Whereas the second level, you're required to interact.
Okay.
Okay. And the third level is meeting God himself face to face. And in order to do that, one has to enter into a loving, reciprocal relationship, as we do on this plane with other humans. And you do not lose your identity on that level of God realization.
Well, one of the great difficulties is in the phrase there, meeting God face to face. God doesn't have a body. We do. And that's the magnet pulling us down to coarseness.
No, God doesn't have a physical body. He has a spiritual body.
So, meeting God face to face is a concept that is very hard to...
Yeah, but God can take a form. And that's what this is saying, that God has a form. See, it's a higher experience to interact with somebody. For example, if you came here tonight and Kalindi and I weren't here, you come into the house and you walk through the house, you will feel our energy in so many ways because of things and, you know, the energy that's here without ever having met us. So you can feel the energy of God without ever meeting God and still have an experience of what that person might be like. But do you want to interact with the energy, or do you want to act with the person behind the energy? The highest experience is always interaction with another being. As above, so below. So you can merge into oneness in the energy of God, into divine energy or spirit, or you can have a relationship, a dynamic, unlimited relationship, which is not static but dynamic, ever changing, ever expanding. Depends what you want. If you're happy just becoming one with the energy, then that's the level for you. But according to Vedic understanding, that's the first level. It's a legitimate level. Well, why not go higher if you can? All right. Close your eyes. Breathe. Relax and let go. Deeply. Deeply relax. Breathe. And let go. Allow the stress, tension, fear, and apprehension to drain from your body. Relax. Deeply relax. And let go. Relax. Breathe. Let go. All right. You enter a room in a big, big, beautiful house, a manor. And in the room are three cabinets or cupboards or wardrobes, something like that, three of them. One on the left, one in the middle, one on the right. These are yours. Your name is on an engraved small brass plaque on each cupboard. The one on the left is your past. The one in the middle is the present. And the one on the right is the future. We approach the wardrobe or the cupboard on the left, open it up. There only need be one thing inside. If there's more, that's fine. But we only need one thing. What is in the wardrobe representing the past? And what must be done with it if anything. How do you feel about it? Close that cupboard. Now move to the next cabinet, the present. Open the doors. What do we find there? What object is inside? What must be done with it, if anything? How do you feel about it? Close that cupboard and step to the cupboard of the future. Open the doors. What is in that wardrobe? What must be done with it, if anything? How do you feel about it? Okay. When you're done, close that door. Please continue with the meditation until you've completed the steps. And relax. Breathe. Let go. When you're ready, open your eyes, return. All right. Okay.